Welcome to the Chic Perspective Show. This is Elizabeth Gordon. Hope you all are having a fantastic afternoon. It is a gorgeous day here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I have a fantastic panel with me this afternoon. Four of the speakers who will be speaking at the upcoming Possible Woman Conference on April 26th at the lovely Marriott Marquis downtown are with us here in the studio today. I've got Marsha Sampson Johnson and Jeffrey Tobias Halter, as well as Connie Glasser and Trisha Malloy. How are y'all doing today?
Great.
Good to be here.
I'm glad that we were able to bring you into the studio. First of all, Linda Nguyen and I have been friends for a long time, and she's got another wonderful conference planned for us. And I know several of you have been involved in Possible Woman for a long time now, so this is not your first time being a part of this event. Marsha, let's hear from you first. You, first of all, are giving the keynote that is entitled Free Your Mind, and you're a writer and a speaker and an advocate really dedicated on the full inclusion of women and people of color in work environments. So talk about how your background ties into a lot of the themes that we hear around the Possible Woman Conference.
Well, first of all, I am absolutely excited to be here. And I tell you, I came back to Atlanta about 7 years ago, and I was introduced to Linda and the Possible Woman Conference. From then on, I've been engaged. Both Linda and, I must say, this conference bring to the city of Atlanta and women around the metropolitan area, and a few come from other places, this wonderful collection of thought, of ideas, of energy that come together to say, let's give ourselves another boost. And I believe in these boosts. I think we have to come together and recharge our batteries. And if your battery needs recharging, there's nothing better than starting out the beginning of spring and launching a new year with the Possible Woman Conference. Even the title, I think, encaptures all of the things that most of us want to do. You know, I have this big plaque at home and it says impossible, but the I am is X'd out, and I look at it all the time. I free your mind is what I'll be talking about, because the conference is titled Imagine. You can't imagine if your mind is in shackles and chains. So I'm going to talk about the kinds of things we all can do to free our minds, to lift our spirits, to be able to focus and imagine. So it'll be a wonderful day at the Marriott Marquis.
Well, you've got a lot of great lessons to teach, and you actually write the column, Lessons from the Corporate Jungle, in the Birmingham Times. So tell me about where you earned your stripes in the lessons from the corporate jungle world.
Well, I was in mostly corporate America for over 30 years with one company for almost 25. And I was very privileged to have had executive roles in division operations and customer services. And I ended up in human resources on a four-state organization. And I have earned some stripes. And what I want to do is make sure that we don't keep starting from scratch, but that there are lessons that we can teach. If you learn something, you ought to teach something. If you get something, you ought to give something. And so that's very fundamental to who I am and why I write. I've also been privileged to do some things for CNN Opinion. And I love to write, first of all. I do it because, not that I want to be an executive coach, I want to reach masses of everyday workers who are struggling to make some sense of the things that go on in corporate America. And it's hard if you don't have a mentor or a coach. And so I'm saying I'm going to mentor and coach the masses by just writing about the lessons I've had. Some were hard-earned. I made some mistakes that don't necessarily need to be made by other people.
Well, we certainly appreciate you sharing those with us so we can avoid those mistakes on our journey. I find that a mentorship of women and budding women leaders in corporate America is so crucial to helping young girls and young women develop into future corporate leaders. have mentors and those relationships you've built with other inspirational women leaders played an important role in your life?
Well, absolutely. I would not be here today without them, but I must hasten to add that I, in one of the articles I wrote, if a polka dot pig wants to mentor you and has the ability and experience, you ought to go there. So I have worked in environments that were mostly male for a long time. So I could not rely solely on women to mentor me and sponsor me. So I have had wonderful mentoring relationships with women and men. It is, of course, seeing people who look like you achieve certain things that really gives you that added belief that you too can do that. So both men and women have been incredibly supportive of me throughout my career.
Tricia, why don't we bring you into the conversation?
I'm so inspired.
Tricia Malloy, who is a motivational speaker on change management, and also the author of Divine Wisdom at Work, 10 Universal Principles for Enlightened Entrepreneurs. Welcome.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts on women and the role that mentors play in their career development?
Well, I guess I probably represent the entrepreneur that will be at this conference. I've had my own marketing business for nearly 25 years and started my second business, my speaking and training business, in 2006. So I come at it from the perspective of an entrepreneur. And I know how important it's been over the years when I started my business and when I chose to grow my business at each step to have mentors and coaches to work with.
And what are some of the things that you're going to be talking about at the conference to inspire entrepreneurs?
Well, there are 7 tracks and 3 sessions for each track. So there's something for everyone. And my track is the first session of the reinvention track. So my program is a program that I do for corporations called Crave Your Goals. And it's about how to master change. It's about how to use principles like affirmations and visualization and gratitude to stay positive and focused, even though you feel distracted and discouraged in today's workforce, and really use those tools to achieve your goals faster and easier.
Awesome. Well, we could all use a little bit of that. Now, Connie Glazer, your keynote is called Gender Talk Works, Cracking the Gender Code at Work. And I'm curious about this code that you speak of. Tell us a little bit more about, I mean, you've worked for lots of different corporate organizations over the years and have gained insight through getting in and seeing what really goes on in companies. How does the gender code work and how can we crack it?
Well, men and women typically use 2 different styles of communications. It's almost as if they are 2 different cultures. And unless you understand those different cultures, you're not going to become a very effective communicator. I had the opportunity to be in India last fall and speak. And before I went, I really immersed myself in the culture, cultural rituals, communication rituals, and so on. And in the workplace, very often we are just oblivious to the differences in communication styles. Women tend to be more indirect. They tend to be more polite. They tend to be less self-promoting in terms of their conversation. And it plays out very nicely when women are talking among themselves. If 2 women are talking and they happen to collide in the conversation, one woman says, oh, I'm sorry. And the other one says, oh, I'm sorry. Or, let you go first. No, let you go first. And we're into a battle of politeness. With men, they tend to have a kind of verbal overlay. This guy talks and this guy comes in and this guy interrupts. It's not that one is good or bad, but they are different styles. For women in particular, they need to understand the other style of communications or they can feel very much excluded and shut out.
Now let's bring the man into the conversation, shall we? Jeff Halter is a consultant, author, and gender strategist and the president of Why Women, which is a strategic consulting company focused on helping men and women understand and unleash the power of women in organizations. Now, you worked as in diversity for a long time at Coca-Cola. What were some of the things that you observed? And ultimately, you know, how did you decide that this was such a big nut that you had to devote full time to it?
Yeah, it's interesting in my career. The first half of my career, I was a line manager. I sold stuff. I managed the business. And then the back half of my career, I worked in leadership development, eventually working in a convergence of leadership competencies. And very similar to Connie, looking at how gender bias plays out in assessing and developing leadership talent. And I was so taken with this, and I'm so honored to be here with Connie. I know she knows this. We met almost 10 years ago when I had the first thoughts of this idea in business, and she was the person I sought out in Atlanta. So I'm so thrilled to be attending this conference with her, and you're going to learn a lot from her. But it was really an epiphany on my part to begin to understand that if you step back and look at most women's leadership initiatives, it tends to focus on let's fix women. Let's have them get better at problem solving or developing relationships. And the point is, women are fine just the way they are. You know, women, like all leaders, of course, have some development areas. But the point is, if you're truly going to unleash the value of women in organizations, you've got to engage men, because men today are still in charge of most organizations. And so it's bringing around a different thoughtware to say, how are we going to begin to engage ready now men in women's leadership initiatives? And quite frankly, I'm a huge advocate for women's networking and women associations, but women talking to women can only drive so much change. You've got to engage men in the dialogue if you're really going to drive long-term success in organizations.
Right. So I see events like this, women networking groups and big women leadership conferences as a way for us to build a strong foundation and revisit those really important underlying principles, develop ourselves as leaders. But the mission after the conference is certainly then, how do we take that back into the very diverse world that we all work and do business in every day? And what do we do with what we've learned? Marcia, what are some of your thoughts about how women can use some of the tools that they learn in this type of a forum and then reintegrate that back into what they're doing on a day-to-day basis?
One of the terms Jeffrey used, if I could go back to that, is so interesting. He said, ready now, men. And it triggered some thoughts when I did leadership development for this big company. We had ready now on our succession planning chart. Ready now, ready in 5 to 10 years, ready in 2 to 3 years. So ready now meant that you had all of the skills and qualities and attributes to run an organization and to really lead. And I would hope that ready now, we're more including in our ready now analysis, this notion of being culturally competent, competent across many dimensions, not just male to male, but male to female. And that's really a hard nut to crack, Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more we can get access to ready now men, or have ready now men, the fewer conversations like this we'll have to have. But we're a long way from that. And I didn't answer Elizabeth's question, but no, I was so stuck and struck by your ready now analysis.
Well, and to provide some clarity, right, it's not about ready now from a talent standpoint. It's ready now with a willingness to engage in deepening their cultural competence. Because what I've found in my research is, in any organization, I believe there are 10 to 15% of men who are ready and willing to help women and minorities move and advance through the organization. The challenge is, we have to be invited in. Part of what white male culture is not to raise our hands and be advocates for it. But we're there. We're ready to support you. But sadly, the burden is on women to invite us in. And you'll find us to be passionate advocate champions.
I don't really fully agree. I do agree, but I think there's another step. I agree that there are a number of men who are advocates, who are champions, who are passionate, I think of that number, there are far fewer who have the courage to confront their male peers in their advocacy. So their full commitment is sometimes lacking, because the real challenge is not how you stand with me as a woman, but how you stand with your male peers. That's the real challenge. And I've just found on a number of dimensions, people were less willing to do that because it was a lot of risk. There's far more risk taking it that next step. Yeah. But I agree.
Let me jump in for a minute.
Please,
because
do.
I think that both of you bring very valid points to the table. I think to Jeffrey's point, well, and to Marcia's too, that if you can present the business case as to why this is such an imperative, that women be empowered, that women be promoted and advanced and encouraged to develop their talents and so on within the organization. I was asked by one of the top CPA and consulting firms in the country. It was at their annual partners meeting about 5 years ago, and they did not have, unlike the Big Four, they did not have a women's leadership initiative, and they were ready to launch, and they felt that they were very much behind the eight ball. And they had a big global annual partners meeting at a very fancy resort in Scottsdale, Arizona, and they asked me, now this was to a group of 300 CPAs from all over the world. It's a profit-sharing organization, and they're number crunchers. So if they were going to buy into this women's leadership initiative, and if they were going to allocate money, then they needed to hear a very strong business case as to why this was important. And I worked with the organization, and they gave me stats and figures of how much money was lost annually in terms of attrition, in terms of lost talent, in terms of replacing talent. And the figure that they used was 100 to 150% of an individual's annual salary if that person left. Right. We ended up with a figure that was well into the tens of millions of dollars. And when I threw that figure out to this group of accountants, their ears perked up. Granted, when I started speaking, I know that they would much rather have been out on the golf course. Mm-hmm. But when they started hearing these numbers of millions that were not in their pockets and instead were being dissipated, then they perked up, they absorbed, they listened, and at the end of the presentation, there was a commitment there. So it's not just about diversity for diversity's sake. There's a very strong, and Jeffrey talks a lot about this in terms of marketing and sales to women and who are the decision makers and the influence peddlers out there. And women are such a critical segment of that population that you do not want to overlook.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously it's the right thing and equality and all of that, but the bottom line business sense of it, that's why this isn't just a fad, but it's a permanent movement and something that you're going to continue to see increase and companies putting more dollars towards and strategic sense towards. How do we invest in our women leaders and really develop them? Tricia?
Yeah, I'm curious about when Jeff said we're waiting for an invitation. What's the invitation look like?
The invitation looks like you inviting me to sit and talk about differences, because it's not a place that we're going to go to naturally, right? And the challenge is for most, I'll say, leaders in organizations today, not just male leaders, right? But it's the, we have been scared to death through litigation, through political correctness, that we will absolutely say the wrong thing. Mm. What that looks like is I will choose to not give you honest feedback. I will give you no feedback or benign feedback. Well, that doesn't help you and that doesn't help the organization. What it looks like is for a man to genuinely say to someone like Connie, as a woman, do you see this any differently? Well, let me tell you, 99.9% of men are scared to death to utter those words. Because if we get it wrong, even tonally, Connie, you're a woman, what do you think? we're wrong. And so it's easier for men to choose to do nothing. So sadly today, the burden, I believe, is still on women to engage in the dialogue and have to drive that dialogue. I'm not saying that's right. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to drive change without women starting the dialogue, but then realizing that, believe it or not, Marcia, there are men out there who want to help you.
Now, Connie, when you're consulting for some of these large organizations, what is the impetus that usually drives them? You mentioned the one client and feeling like, well, everybody else is doing it. We've really got to get on this. And then seeing the economic side, what are typically the drivers to saying, we really need to invest in our women's leadership
Well,
program?
It's economic. It's the bottom line. We see a lot of women who are leaving organizations, and Trish was talking about becoming entrepreneurs. We see a tremendous number of women who have left the corporate world because of frustration, because of glass ceiling, because of what they perceived as being inherent biases, to become entrepreneurs, to start their own businesses. It's so expensive for an organization to lose talented women. They have a tremendous investment in these women. So the retention is very important. And then there is a whole pool of talent that you are not maximizing, that you are not leveraging. So how can we, all right, let's go back to the communications for a minute. Let's go to a meeting scenario where there are these guys and one guy's talking, another guy jumps in. This is their style. He comes over here. And here is a woman, particularly from certain ethnic or national backgrounds, who may be more demure. I've done a lot of work consulting in Silicon Valley, for instance, and I have found that very often culturally Asian women find it very difficult to get into this really fast, overlapping, interruptive type of conversation. And there are some of these women who are brilliant, but here they are at the meeting and they can't get themselves invested in the conversation. We're losing out on good ideas. We're losing out on a diversity of perspectives and values. We can't allow that. We're losing out on innovation. And we know that that is what is driving companies now.
How about you, Jeff? What are the corporate drivers you hear when you're having these conversations with clients?
Well, and it's exactly what Connie talked about. I think the great challenge is most organizations have not been able to clearly articulate why we're doing this. It's very much a conceptual mindset that says, yeah, I get it. It's a nice thing to do. But by and large, most of the organizations I've worked with, and these are CPG companies that derive 80 to 90% of their revenue from women, still do not have a predominance of women in leadership roles. And it seems so counterintuitive, but I chalk it up to exactly what Connie talked about. There's only really two reasons for organizations to do women's leadership initiatives or diversity initiatives. One is to drive more revenue. You've got to either find a way to drive top line, and that's through getting consumers and customers, but you also need to have it owned by the business. It's not an HR initiative. So how do you embed that in the business? And then the second reason is in this age of, you know, it's really tough to drive, you know, anything more than single digit growth. So then you've got to look at operating profit. And so how do you find ways to save money? Well, that looks like engagement, right? If most companies, high-performing companies, have 80% engagement, what that says is in a good day, I get 6.4 good work hours out of my best employees. But most employees are engaged at a 40 to 50% level.
Right.
That may look like a single mother who is worried about her children or picking them up late from daycare. It may look like a gay lesbian employee who can't bring themselves out at work. It may look like a minority employee that, you know, there's a lot of research done about living dual lives that they have to kind of check part of themselves at the door. Well, what are we losing by not fully engaging people? And then operating profit, to Connie's point, the turnover, what is the cost of that? And then finally, how do you bring this together into an integrated business strategy that's measurable, that's accountable, and really a business priority? You know, one of the funniest comments I've ever heard is, you know, you talk to most diversity people and they say, well, we're on a journey. Well, you know what? I've never heard salespeople say we're on a journey. Right? You have monthly quotas. You have weekly quotas. You know, there's no journey involved. Mm-hmm. And diversity should not be a journey. It should be a business priority for so many reasons, including it's the right thing to do for organizations.
Right, and something that you can take action on and start to see results pretty quickly. Now, Marcia, you work a lot with women leaders and helping them amp up their skill set in terms of taking on more and more roles. I mean, we want these doors to open up to us. We want that glass ceiling to go away so women can take charge and hold higher leadership positions. What are some of the skills that you think are really important that women focus on in order to continue to climb the ladder and take on higher levels of authority?
I would say they're many of the same skills, not all, but many of the same skills that everyone who achieves in the organization has to have. I have to say that it's so interesting when I hear the talks about diversity and all that kind of stuff, because this is 2012.
Right.
And if people don't know these things yet, then we must have some barriers that we've not yet identified, because the intellectual debates have already been laid out. But the bottom line is the businesses are in business to make money. I have to say that the first thing you have to do is understand the business that you're in, understand how that business works, how it makes money, and then you have to engage in that way. It's not a secret. It really isn't a secret. And I think that women who are customers have to be a little tougher on businesses who serve them and where they spend their dollars. Because the businesses know, you see, another solution, if I don't want to engage in attrition of a lot of women, is not to hire a lot of women. And so there are these opposing things that people do. And the reality is people are not pressured. Too many businesses are not pressured. They are not responding to the business cases that are just laid out there before them. Why? Because they're not feeling it right now. If you look at those businesses who are engaging and who have tied, and I have to bring up Diversity Inc. When they list those companies and those CEOs get up there in those conferences, they're talking pure dollars. But even their testimonials about how these integrated workforces fully engaged, and white men are as much unengaged on many dimensions as that single mother, as that gay or lesbian employee who can't bring his or her whole self to the table. Because all engagement is a measure of one's willingness to take discretionary action for the good of the company. And if you tap into that, then I think businesses will understand. But I'm not sure if I know the answer today as to why we're not farther along, because there have been so many business cases made, so many. And so then you think, why? Or maybe they were lousy business cases. I don't know. But there's something else afoot. I think women have to own understanding the businesses in which we work, understanding the value we bring, how to deliver, make contributions. We have to own that. I think women en masse have to ratchet up the level of accountability that we hold businesses to and individuals to for performing, because we give our dollars very casually. The other side of the coin is how much money women spend in this country.
Fantastic points. Now, Tricia, I know you work a lot with this idea of how to bring the whole person to the office and really capitalize on all of the attributes of a person by getting the employee more engaged, the company gets more out of that employee, right?
It's true. It's about making conscious choices and intentionally developing a positive mindset. So it's about, you know, what are you saying to yourself? What are you saying to others? What are you picturing in terms of your goals? How are you using gratitude to keep you focused and motivated? It's all those things that really do make a difference. And they're so simple and subtle, but very powerful. And that's what I typically do when I do my talks or I mentor women professionals or entrepreneurs. I see where they're going in terms of how they think and what they see and how they feel, and then figure out a way to give them tools so that they can stay positive and focused and move in the right direction.
And we should mention, to Marcia's point, that this is not a journey we started yesterday. Wind Enterprises, this is the 16th annual Possible Woman Leadership Conference, and initiatives and efforts like this have been around for quite some time. And sometimes you do start to feel a little impatient, like, aren't we there yet? But there is a lot more of progress that needs to be made with continuing to empower women leaders. A lot of big companies are behind this. I mean, they're hiring people like you all to help them continue to make strides. They're sponsoring this great event that we have upcoming on April 26th. What are some of the things you think that we can look forward to seeing as we continue to make progress in this area? Connie?
Well, I think this whole idea of empowerment is very important. And to Marcia's point, women understanding the value that they bring to the table within organizations. Too many times I have seen women who inadvertently may undermine themselves or sabotage themselves, often through their communication styles. Going back to the meeting scenario, a woman at a meeting who might say, I know this may be a dumb question, but... Now, when she is talking to female peers, they know that it is a kind of conversational ritual, and they're not taking it literally. However, men tend to be more literal in their conversation, in their hearing, and if they hear dumb question, those are the two words that resonate in their ears. She has fully discredited herself, and it's very unlikely that whatever follows that, that there is a guy at the table who's going to say, oh, that wasn't a dumb question at all. So I think that women need to be very mindful of the value that they bring to the table, that they need to demonstrate that kind of inner confidence and credibility and their ability to lead and to influence others within the organization.
And there's this wonderful book, Connie, that comes to mind that's just come out recently. I think it's Mika Brzezinski.
Yes.
Oh. Yes. Knowing Your Value. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage everybody to read that. But it's just a wonderful book that underscores exactly what you're
saying. And to Jeff's point, when he was talking about asking the men.
Asking. Yeah.
She makes a very strong point about asking for what you are worth. And it turns out that even women who are graduating from Harvard Business School, that they ask for less in their initial job than men do. Men seem to like the negotiation process. It's kind of a game with them, whereas women tend to back off from it because, well, maybe they won't like me as much or think that I am greedy or self-aggrandizing if I ask for more.
That's
and
right.
The numbers have been tracked, and it ends up that over the course of a career, it can be as much as $500,000 differential between the earning power of men and women simply because they didn't know or ask for their value in that very first job.
And that not asking coupled with some organizations paying a lot less because perhaps they weren't asked or perhaps they just...
Right.
Or continuing
Jeff,
something
what's the
else.
The flip side of that, if women don't ask, and do men ask for more? Do they over ask?
Well, men absolutely do. There's and I can't recall the research, but it just came out recently, and it asks for men and women to do word association around the word negotiation. And when men were asked, they said the thing they associated with was winning a ball game. Right, and a sports analogy, no great surprise.
Oh, it's a contest. All right.
Yeah, it's win and lose, right?
I'm ready to play.
Women's comment was, it's like going to the dentist. And that was their analogy. And, you know, the research is out there that, quite frankly, women don't negotiate. And if there is one critical skill for leaders today, as they're going to move up in the organization, as they're going to garner resources for their project or whatever that
That's
might
right.
be,
that
you know, take a negotiation skills program. It's one of the key foundations for success, and I believe it's critically important for women.
I agree.
That's great advice. Now, you all have been friends with Linda Wynn, who is the founder of the Possible Women Conference, for a long time. I know you've all been involved in this conference over the years. Talk about what it means to you to be a part of Possible Woman and what the vision of Imagine this year really means to you. Tricia, want to start out?
Well, I have a very warm place in my heart for Linda. When I started my Working with Wisdom business, one of my first gigs was in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, at a 5-star all-inclusive resort executive retreat that Linda put on. And then I've been to most of these events, the Atlanta event, since then, and this is my first time that I'm speaking again. So whenever I go as a participant, I'm amazed at how much information I take in from the different programs, the networking in between, just the energy of the group, and the way that Linda involves the foundation as part of it. It's just so much positive energy. It's really a great way to spend a day. It's a real gift, I think.
Yes, on many levels. Connie, what are some of the things that you've enjoyed over the years being part of this?
Well, I remember when Linda started the first conference, and it was shortly after my breakthrough book, Swim with the Dolphins, How
right.
Women Can Succeed in Corporate America,
love
had come out.
Book.
Thank you.
Wow.
And the phrase glass ceiling had just been kind of formulated. So these are early on days. And to Jeff's point, you know, certainly there are certain areas that perhaps we should perceive as more immediate accountability and less of a journey. But indeed, when you take a look, and also to Marcia's point, we've been doing this now for 16 years. So why so slow? Why aren't we further along on the path? Well, taking a look at where we were in 1996 and where we are today, I think we have made enormous strides. Yes, still miles to go before we sleep. But I think that Linda has been a real trailblazer. She has been a close friend and colleague of mine for all of these years. And I think that she has done a marvelous job in engaging and bringing attention to these issues and garnering corporate support along the way.
And that's very important as well. Marcia, what are you looking forward to about the conference?
Well, I'm actually looking forward to the night before the conference, when the foundation will honor and recognize and raise funds at the Ansley Golf Course for some scholarship recipients, some women who have had some very difficult challenges. They've overcome them, and they're now on a path to achieve their dreams. So that I don't know, boosts my spirits for the next day when I see a large number of women from all walks of life just coming to learn more, to understand more, to imagine themselves being and doing all the things they think they're capable of, and that's what's important.
It is extremely moving when you see these scholarship recipients getting this money and how it really changes what's possible now for them and really makes such a pivotal difference
right.
in what their prospects are and what their future can hold. Jeff, you've been involved with Possible Woman for a while as well. What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, and I'm going to echo Marcia's point. My first involvement was actually being able to go to the fundraising dinner, and now they've actually opened it up to the public, and I would really encourage people to go to the event. It is so worthwhile, and just to build on it a little around why this is so critical. The scholarships that are given to what Linda describes as non-traditional women, and so these are women routinely in their 30s, who never had an opportunity to go to college. They may have been a single mother. They may have struggled financially. And now they are taking control of their lives. And they literally get thousands of letters in requesting scholarship aid. And that night, you get to meet the scholarship
yes.
participants. And it is so moving. You know, and these women are just incredible. You know, it's a mid-30 mom with three children who, you know, lost her home for not her fault, who has now, you know, started a nonprofit for other women like herself, and she's going back to college at night. And you hear story after story after story, and it is so moving that I think that is the biggest reason to be so excited about this event. And then the payoff comes, you know, the next day when you can come and get, you know, rewarded and nurtured. But I would put a big plug out there because this is the first year the event is open to the public.
That's correct.
And so please go to the website, register. It is it will be life-changing for you to come to the event the evening before.
Absolutely, and we'll go ahead and give that website. You can register at windenterprises.com or possiblewoman.com. Well, we're almost out of time, but it's been a fantastic conversation. I'm sitting here with four of the speakers at the upcoming Possible Woman Conference: Marsha Sampson Johnson, Jeffrey Tobias Halter, Connie Glazer, and Tricia Malloy. And I want to now turn to our chic tip segment. So each of you has given us a lot to think about today in our conversation. I wonder if you could boil it down to a few words of wisdom and offer one tip, words of advice to future women leaders as they look at, how do I be more like these fabulous people on the panel today? Marsha, would you like to start with your tip?
I'll just go back to something I've said already during the show, and that is see yourself being and doing that which you want to be and do. If you can't see yourself being and doing, you can't have it. So start to imagine.
Good point. I love it. Tricia, how about you?
The simple statement of truth: what you think, what you feel, what you say to yourself and to others, and what you believe to be true creates your reality. So it's up to you whether you create it by default or by design.
That's very true. So own it. Connie.
I think one of the great benefits of the conference, in addition to the information and inspiration that all will derive, is the extraordinary mass and support of women being there together. And I don't think that we can ever underestimate women supporting, advocating, championing one another, and how that can help each of us advance our own personal and collective goals.
Absolutely. We're all on the same team, even the guys. So, Jeff, what tip do you have?
Well, and I'm going to kind of give away the end of my story in the closing keynote, but I think it'll be well worth repeating at the time. And you can totally feel free to throw me under the bus and said, hey, I heard this crazy guy on the radio and he said we need to do this. For the women out there, I want you to walk into your boss or a male colleague's office that you know has a daughter. And I want you to just look him in the eye and say, hey, this guy on the radio said, I should ask you that, you know, Jim, you've got a daughter, you've put her through college. Would you want your daughter to work for this organization? And would you want your daughter to work for you?
Ooh.
And I know it sounds like a guilt trip, but I will tell you there is no greater way to touch men in organizations than through their daughter. Mm-hmm. Because there is a special place for fathers and daughters. And it really brings it home in a very personal manner. Because what it does, and Marsha, you touched on this point, it moves you from benign knowledge to advocacy. Because I have to tell you, for the first 20 years of my business career, I wasn't mean to women. I didn't go out of my way to be, you know, sexist. But I chose not to be an advocate. And I don't know how, as a father in business, you can choose to not help women, because that's going to be your daughter someday. So that's my chic tip.
That's awesome. I love it. All right. I know our listeners are going to want to find out more about you all. Obviously, they can come hear you talk at the Possible Woman Imagine 2012 conference, April 26th at the Atlanta Marriott Marquis, and check out windenterprises.com to get your tickets to that event. If they want to contact any of you for your businesses individually, let's give that contact information. Jeff, why don't we start with you?
Sure, I'd love to. My website is women.biz. And so the Y obviously stands for the Y chromosome, just as a reminder around getting men engaged. So the letter Y, women.biz.
Love it. Thanks. Connie?
My website is connieglazer, glaser.com. I invite people to come and visit.
Excellent. And Tricia?
Tricia Malloy, that's TriciaMolloy.com.
And Marsha Sampson Johnson.
MarshaSampsonJohnson.com.
All righty. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in to another excellent chic episode of our Women Success Forum, and we will look forward to seeing you all at the Possible Women Conference. I want to give a big thank you to my guests today and to Linda Nguyen for putting this all together. This is Elizabeth Gordon with Business Radio X, and we will talk to you next week.